This is Audible.
Big Rock. Written by Lauren Blakely. Narrated by Sebastian York. Prologue. My dick is fucking awesome. But don't just take my word for it. Consider all its accomplishments. First, let's start with the obvious one. Size. Sure, some people will tell you that size does not matter. You know what I'll tell you? They lie. You don't want a tiny diamond on your finger when you can have 3 carats. You don't want a $1 bill when you can have a Benjamin. And you don't want to ride a miniature pony when you can saddle up on a rock star cock at the rodeo of your pleasure. Why? Because bigger is better. It's more fun. Ask any woman who's ever had to utter the dreaded words, "Is it in yet?" No woman has ever had to ask me that. You're probably wondering by now, just how big is it? Come on, a gentleman doesn't tell. I may fuck like a god, but I'm still a gentleman. I'll open your door before I open your legs. I'll hold your coat for you. I'll pay for dinner. And I'll treat you like a queen in and out of bed. But I get it. You want an image in your mind. A measurement in inches to make your mouth water. Fine. Imagine this. Picture your fantasy-sized cock. Mine's fucking bigger. Moving on to looks. Let's be honest. Some dicks are just motherfucking ugly. I won't get into all the reasons why. You know what they are. And when it comes to my best asset, all I want you thinking about are these words. Long, thick, smooth, hard. If the Renaissance masters were carving sculptures of cocks, mine would be the model for all of them. But honestly, none of this would matter if my dick didn't possess the most important attribute of all. Performance. Ultimately, a man's dick should be measured by the number of orgasms it delivers. I'm not talking about the solo flights. That's cheating. I'm talking about the O's that can make a woman's back arch, her toes curl, her windows shatter, her world rock. How much pleasure has my dick wrought? I don't kiss and tell, but I'll leave you with this. My dick has a perfect track record. That's why it fucking sucks that he has to go on hiatus. Chapter 1. Men don't understand women. That's just a fact of life. Like that guy. The dude down there at the corner of my bar. His elbows on the metal counter in an aren't I casual and cool pose. He's stroking his handlebar mustache. And he's acting like he's the best listener in the world as he talks to a hot brunette with square red glasses. But the thing is, he's staring at her rack. Fine, the brunette has nice tits, and I mean nice in the sense that they could occupy their own zip code. But come on, man. Her eyes are up there, and you've got to look at them, or the lady is going to walk. I finish pouring a pale ale for one of our regulars, a businessman who pops in once a week. He's working the whole, my boss sucks for making me travel, look, and at the very least I can help him in the drink department. This one's on the house. Enjoy. I say, sliding the glass to him. Best news I've had all day, he says with a small quirk of the lips, before he chugs half the glass and plunks down a $3 tip. Nice. The bartenders here, who depend on tips, will appreciate it. But Jenny had to take off early because her sister had some sort of crisis, so I'm handling the last of the customers, while my business partner, Charlotte, is managing the books. As Handlebar leans in closer to Red Square, she backs away, shakes her head, grabs her purse, and heads for the exit. Yep, I could be a fortune teller if my specialty was predicting when a man would score and when he wouldn't. Most of the time, the odds are definitely not in the dude's favor, because he makes the most common bar mistakes. Like starting the conversation with a stupid pickup line. Girl, you make my software turn into hardware. Or, you should sell hot dogs because you sure know how to make a wiener stand. Yeah, I couldn't believe my ears either. Or how about this mistake? The guy who has a wandering eye and can't stop checking out the other attractions. What woman is going to find that flattering? The worst bar sin, though, is assuming. Assuming she wants to talk to you, assuming she's going home with you, assuming you can kiss her without her permission. You know what they say when you assume. But me? Just check my diploma. I double majored in college with one degree in finance and the other in the language of women, and I graduated summa cum laude. I have an encyclopedic understanding of what a woman wants, and giving it to her. I achieved full fluency in female body language, the clues, and the gestures. Like right now. Charlotte is tapping away on her laptop and biting the corner of her lip in concentration. Translation. I am on a roll, so do not bother me, or I will throat punch you. Okay, fine. She's not really a throat puncher. But the point being, she is giving off major do not disturb vibes. Handlebar, though, can't read, speak, or write, woman. He's sauntering along the bar, getting ready to make a move, thinking he's got a chance with her. From my spot behind the bar, wiping down glasses, I can practically hear him clearing his throat as he preps to say hello to Charlotte. I can't understand why the man has my best friend in his crosshairs. Charlotte is pretty much a goddess of the highest order. First, she has wavy blonde hair, paired with deep brown eyes. Most blondes have blue eyes, so Charlotte gets major points for the killer reverse combo that just slams you with its unexpected and absolute hotness. Next, she possesses a fantastic dry sense of humor. Plus, she's whip smart. But Handlebar doesn't know those last two. He's only aware that she's gorgeous, so he's about to make his play. He snags the stool next to her and flashes a toothy grin. She flinches, startled that this guy just invaded her blinders-on work zone. Charlotte can totally handle herself, but we made a pact long ago and re-upped when we went into business together on this bar. If either of us needs a fake girlfriend or boyfriend to gracefully get out of a sticky situation, we've sworn to step in and act the part. It's a game we've played since college, and it works like a charm. It also works because Charlotte and I would never be a real couple. I need her too much as a friend, and judging from the number of times she's laughed with me or cried on my shoulder, she needs me too. Which is another reason why this tactic is brilliant. We both know we will never be more than friends. I walk around the bar and head straight for Charlotte, right as Handlebar reaches her and says his name, then asks for hers. I slide in and brush a hand on her lower back as if she's mine, as if I'm the one who gets to touch this body, thread his fingers through her hair and look into those eyes. I tilt my head and flash him the biggest shit-eating grin because I'm the lucky son of a bitch who goes home with her in this scenario. My fiancé's name is Charlotte. Nice to meet you. I'm Spencer, I say, and offer a hand to shake. The guy wrinkles his nose like a rabbit, getting a clue that he's just struck out again tonight. Have a good night, he mutters and scurries out. Charlotte tips her chin to me and gives an approving nod. Look at you. Captain Fiancé coming to the rescue, she says, running a hand along my arm and squeezing my bicep. I didn't even see him making the moves. That's why you've got me. I have eyes everywhere, I say, as I lock the front door. The bar is empty now. It's just us, like it's been so many nights at closing time. And usually those peepers are busy scanning for available women, she says, shooting me an I-know-you-so-well stare. What can I say? I like to give my eyes a good workout, too, just like the rest of me, I say, patting my flat as a bored belly. Then she yawns. Get to bed, I tell her. You should, too. Oh, wait, you probably have a date. She's not far off, I usually do. Earlier this month, I met a total babe at the gym. She worked out hard, then worked out even harder with me when I bent her over the back of the couch in my apartment. She texted me the next day, telling me how her thighs were aching and she'd loved it. She said if I ever made it to Los Angeles, would I please look her up, because she wanted to ride my ride again. Of course she did. Once you've had filet mignon, you don't want to go back to Hamburger Helper. I saved her number. You never know, right? Nothing wrong with two adults enjoying the night and parting ways in the morning with a spring in the step, a courtesy of multiple O's bestowed. That's how it should be. The first rule of dating is this. Always please the woman first, then ideally a second time before you get yours in. The next two are equally simple. Don't get attached, and never, ever be a douche. I follow my own rules, and they have given me the good life. I'm 28, single, rich, hot, and a gentleman. Like it's a surprise when I get laid. But tonight, my dick is off duty. Early bedtime. I shake my head in answer to Charlotte's question as I resume cleaning the counters. Nah, I have a 7:30 breakfast tomorrow with my dad and some guy he's trying to sell the store to. I need to be fresh and ready to impress. She points to the door. Go get your beauty sleep, Spencer. I'll close up. I don't think so. I came to fill in for Jenny. You go home. I'll hail you a cab. You do know I've lived in New York for 5 years, right? I know how to hail a cab late at night. I am well aware of your independent ways, but I don't care. I'm sending you home. Whatever you're doing here, you can do at your apartment, I tell her, as I toss the wash rag in the sink. Wait, you're not worried that Bradley Dipstick is going to be roaming around the lobby trying to give you flowers at this time of night? No, he usually plans his apology ambushes for the daylight hours. Yesterday he sent me a 3-foot-tall teddy bear holding a red satin heart that said, "Please forgive me." What the hell am I supposed to do with that? Send it back to him, at his office, with red lipstick on the heart spelling out N-O. Charlotte's ex-boyfriend is a grade-A, top-choice douche nozzle, and the bastard will never get her back. I hold up a hand. Wait. Is there any chance this teddy bear has a middle finger on his paw? She laughs. Now that's a good idea. I just wish the whole building didn't know my business. I know. I wish you didn't have to run into him ever again in the whole history of time. I hail her a cab, give her a peck on the cheek, and send her home. After I close up, I head to my pad in the West Village, the 6th floor of a kick-ass brownstone with a terrace that has a view of all lower Manhattan. Perfect on a June night like this. I toss my keys on the entryway table as I scroll through my recent messages on my phone. I laugh when my sister Harper texts me a photo from a gossip mag, one from a few weeks ago, of me out with the hot woman from the gym. Turns out she's a celebrity trainer from some reality TV show, and I'm the noted New York City playboy. Same thing the magazine called me when I was seen with a hot new chef at a restaurant opening in Miami last month. Tonight, I'm a good boy, though. I make no promises for tomorrow. Chapter 2. Button-down shirt, tie, charcoal gray pants, dark brown hair, green eyes, chiseled jaw. Yep, it's all working. I fully approve of myself this Friday morning, and if I were a dude in a cheesy movie, I'd give myself 2 thumbs up. But honestly, I'm not that kind of guy. I mean, who does that? Instead, I turn to my cat, Fido, and ask him what he thinks. His response is simple. He struts off in the other direction, his tail high in the air. Fido and I have an understanding. I feed him, and he doesn't cock-block me. He'd appeared on my balcony a year ago, meowing at the sliding glass door, wearing a tag that said, "Princess Poppy." I checked his collar and found he belonged to this sweet little old lady in the building who'd just moved on to the great beyond. That sweet little old lady had evidently confused him for a girl. She'd left no relatives nor any forwarding instructions for the cat. I took him in, ditched his pink sparkly collar, and gave him a name befitting his manhood. It's a win-win relationship. Like tomorrow night. Fido won't bitch and moan when I come home late, because I fully expect to be stumbling through the door in the wee hours. I'm working tonight, but Jenny's back on shift tomorrow, and I need to take my man Nick out to celebrate. His hit TV show was just re-upped for another season on Comedy Nation, and we plan to toast many times over at a watering hole in Gramercy Park. Besides, there's a hot bartender there I've talked to a few times. Her name is Lena, and she makes a mean Harvey Wallbanger, so she put her name in my contacts as the drink itself. Well, part of the drink. Bang her. Sounds promising enough, and by promising I mean a sure thing. I take off and make my way uptown on the subway to the Upper East Side, my parents' stomping ground. Yeah, they're well off, but they're also, shocker, not assholes. That's right. This isn't the story of a guy with a rich, shithead dad and a cold, bitchy mom. This is the tale of a guy who likes his parents, and whose parents like him. Guess what else? My parents like each other, too. How do I know this? Because I'm not fucking deaf. No, I didn't hear that when I was a kid. Instead, I heard my mom whistling a happy tune every morning when she woke up. I learned some good lessons from them. Happy wife equals happy life, and one way to make a woman happy is in the bedroom. Today, though, my job is to make Dad happy, and Dad wants his offspring with him at this breakfast meeting, including my little sister, Harper. She walks toward me on 82nd Street, her red hair like a sheet of flame. When she reaches me, she pretends she's about to take a quarter from behind my ear. Look what I found. Wait, what's that here? She waves her hand behind my other ear and produces a tampon. Her mouth falls into a shocked O. Spencer Holiday, you're carrying tampons now? When did you start getting your period? I crack up. She reaches behind my other ear and brandishes a small pill. Oh, look, here's some Advil for when you get cramps. Good one. I smile. Do you perform that one at all the children's parties? No, Harper winks. But it's tricks like that that keep the moms booking me 6 months out. She joins me as we walk toward the restaurant on 3rd Avenue, wandering along one of those perfect New York blocks, the kind with wide stoops and red brick brownstones and trees with lush branches every 10 feet. It looks like the set of a rom-com. How's the city's noted playboy? I heard Cassidy Winters said you were the best time she's had in ages. I furrow my brow. Who's that? She rolls her eyes. The hot trainer you were in the papers with? I sent you the picture last night. Didn't you read the caption? I shake my head. Nah. Besides, she was ages ago. That's what a few weeks feels like in the dating world. Guess she's still singing your praises. Looks like I'll be erasing her number. Flapping your gums will get you blackballed. Well, you better watch it with Mr. Offerman, Dad's buyer, she says, as a blue-haired lady walking a Pomeranian heads in our direction. You mean I shouldn't hit on him? I ask, deadpan. I stop in the middle of the block, gyrate my hips, give my best stripper stare. Do a little dance. I smack my own ass. Back it up. Harper's face goes beet red. She shifts her eyes in the direction of the lady. Oh, my God, stop it. So, don't do my usual Chippendales routine, then. She grabs my arm and pulls me along as we pass the dog owner. The woman waggles her eyebrows at me and mouths, nice moves. See, chicks dig me. Anyway, what I mean is he's very conservative, family values and all, which is why we're here. Of course. Act as if we're a happy family and like each other, right? Is that what I should do? I say and give her a huge noogie, because she deserves it. Ouch! Don't mess up my hair. Fine, fine, I get it. You want me to pretend I'm a choir boy and you're an angel. She places her palms together in prayer. I am an angel. We enter the restaurant and my dad greets us in the lobby. Harper excuses herself for the ladies' room and my dad claps me on the back. Thank you for joining me. You got the memo, right? Of course. Don't I look the part of the successful blue-blooded son? I slide my hand along my tie, courtesy of Barney's, thank you very much. He gives me a mock punch on the jaw. You always do. Then he drapes an arm over my shoulders. Ah, I'm so glad you're here. And listen, he says, lowering his voice. You know I don't care what you do after hours. But Mr. Offerman has 4 daughters, ages 17 down to 11, so he prefers a bit more of a goody-two-shoes image, I say, flashing my best good boy grin. My dad snaps his fingers and nods. Are they here at breakfast, his daughters? He shakes his head. Just you and your sister, him and me. He wanted to meet the two of you, and all I mean is the less your status as the noted New York City playboy comes up, the happier he will be, and the happier he is, the happier I am. Can you do that? I heave a sigh and widen my eyes. I don't know, Dad. That, like, seriously limits my conversational abilities, since I usually only talk about women and sex. Fuck, I say in a frustrated tone. I pretend to prop myself up, counting off on my fingers. Okay, politics, religion, gun control. That's what I'll focus on, okay? Don't make me get my muzzle, he jokes. Dad, I got this. I will not derail your dream. I promise you that. For the next hour, I am the dutiful son and rising New York businessman. I won't say a word about women or the boyfriend material app, I tell him, because I'm a chameleon. I can play party boy or serious businessman. I can play Yale graduate or trash talker. Today, I'll be calling on my Ivy League self, not the dude who created and sold one of the hottest dating apps. Thank you for keeping low-key about that side of things. I've been searching for years for the right buyer, and I think we finally found one. If all goes well on the last few details, we should be signing the papers the end of next week. My dad is a rock star in the jewelry business. Hardly anyone knows his name, but pretty much everyone knows his store. He started Catherine's on Fifth Avenue 30 years ago, and it is the definition of class in the jewelry business. The sky blue boxes the store uses have become nothing short of iconic, a sign that a gorgeous gift is on its way. Pearls, diamonds, rubies, silver, gold, you name it. Named for my mom, Catherine's is a palace of sophistication, and my dad has turned the Fifth Avenue store into the flagship of a chain with locations in 12 cities around the globe. Catherine's put my sister and me through private school, then college, and has generally made our lives all around awesome. Dad wants to retire and sail around the world with my mom. It's been his dream, and he finally found the right buyer, someone who gets the refined elegance he's built and has the financial profile for the kind of transaction he requires. Leaving the business to Harper or me was never in the cards. I have zero interest in running an international jewelry chain, and my sister doesn't either. I'm already doing what I love. Running the three Lucky Spot bars in Manhattan with Charlotte. Besides, I made my own mint when I launched boyfriend material straight out of college. The whole premise was simple, but genius. No dick pics allowed. Because, wait for it, women don't like dick pics. At the early stage of dating, there's basically nothing more aggressive and off-putting than sending a lady you're interested in a shot of your junk. Doesn't matter if you're hung like a horse. That shot will make her cringe. My app offered a haven for women, a promise that they wouldn't be photographically assaulted by unwelcome cock shots. The app took off. My investors made major bank, and I cleaned up like the lucky bastard I am. But for the next hour, while talking to Mr. Offerman, I'm simply a guy who works in the food and beverage business. Game on. Chapter 3. Dad escorts Harper and me to a big round table, covered in a crisp white tablecloth, in the back of the restaurant. Mr. Offerman, I'm delighted to introduce you to my children. This is my daughter Harper and my son Spencer. With dark eyes and jet black hair, Mr. Offerman is tall and imposing. He's built like a tree trunk, and he stands ramrod straight. I bet he was military. He has the air of a general. Pleasure to meet the two of you, he says in a deep baritone. Yep, this man gives orders. We exchange pleasantries and settle in at the table. Once we order, he narrows in on Harper. I've heard a lot about you. How fantastic that you're a magician. As he pumps her with questions, it hits me. Harper's profession is perfect for his family-friendly image. She works kids' parties, and he's eating that up. She shows him some of her tricks. She makes his fork disappear, then his napkin, then his water glass. Wonderful. I bet it simply mesmerizes all the children. My girls would love that. Dude, you have teenagers. I highly doubt they're keen on sleight of hand. I'll be happy to show them, Harper says, bestowing her shining smile on Mr. Offerman, winning him over. Wonderful. I'd love to set up a dinner for tomorrow night for all of us, with my wife and daughters.
I'd love to be there, Harper says.
He fixes his gaze on me. And how is boyfriend material going? Ah, there it is. Clearly he's done his research. I hear from the company that bought it that it's going well. But I'm not involved anymore, I say, deflecting the question. It's quite a hit, from what I've read about it. You seem to know what women want. I gulp and hazard a glance at my dad. He has on his plastic smile. He doesn't want Mr. Offerman going down this road. All I know, sir, is that you need to treat a woman well, and when the time is right to get down on one knee, you should go for more than one carat from Catherine's. I give myself props for the jewelry joke. He smiles and nods, then clears his throat. I also have a reporter from Metropolis Life and Times Magazine that's following the sale of the jewelry franchise. Bit of a business feature. Bit of a lifestyle piece, too. I hope it's not too much to ask, but I'd love if we can all agree to focus on the stores over the next few weeks during the transition. Not on matchmaking apps or related matters that the press seems to love. Like dating exploits. He stops to spread his napkin across his lap. Do you know what I mean? We all know what you mean, man. My father weighs in. I couldn't agree more. There's no need for the article to be about anything else but jewelry. Good. Mr. Offerman returns his focus to me, and the inquisition isn't over. Your new business is going well? The food and beverage industry is a fantastic one to be in. Charlotte and I started the Lucky Spot 3 years ago, and it's going great. Fun place, great reviews, customers are happy. He peppers me with more questions about the bar, and I can tell it's all part of his need to vet me in person, to see if my new business seems as sleazy as he thinks my last one was. But I can handle men like him. I didn't start my own company because I was easily intimidated. I started it because I was fucking fearless, and I read the market just like I can read him. I know how to give him what he wants, and I do so with each answer because giving him what he wants is good for my dad. What do you enjoy most about it? Working with Charlotte is great, I say, because how can I go wrong with that answer? We were pretty much meant to do this together. We see eye to eye on everything. A smile tugs at the corner of his lips. That's fantastic. How long have you... His question is cut off when the waiter brings our plates, but I've got the gist of it. How long have we been friends? Since college, I answer. Wonderful, he says, as the waiter sets down his eggs benedict. I hope you can join us tomorrow night for the dinner party, then. Oh, so I've passed his test. Yay me. I'd be thrilled, I say. There goes celebrating with Nick, but he'll understand. I sneak a glance at my dad, who's looking pleased that this breakfast is going well so far. Mr. Offerman picks up his fork. And perhaps you could bring your girlfriend. I nearly choke on my orange juice. My dad starts to correct him, but Mr. Offerman keeps talking, that big baritone leaving no room for interruption. My wife would love to meet Charlotte. All my girls would, too. We have such a family-centric business, and it's so important to maintain that during a visible transition time, considering the media interest and all. I love knowing that they'll see this committed side of you. I part my lips to correct the misunderstanding, to tell him Charlotte is just a friend, that we're only business partners. But his smile right now is like his signature on the deal itself. I make a line of scrimmage decision. Mr. Offerman already thinks Charlotte is my longtime girlfriend, and that pleases the punch out of him. What if she was more? Go big or go home. Actually, Charlotte and I have just been friends since college, I say. Then take a beat to deliver what he wants. But we started dating a month ago, and we just got engaged last night. I couldn't be happier to share the news here. She's my fiancée now. Harper drops her fork, my father blinks, and Mr. Offerman lights up, We're talking Rockefeller Christmas tree style. He's beside himself with glee over this family environment he just waltzed into. He thought he was getting a playboy, and instead he's landed a groom-to-be. And I would be thrilled to bring my beautiful and brilliant fiancée to your dinner tomorrow, I add, then flash my dad a big grin before I dig into my scrambled eggs. My sister is staring at me like she's about to commence a cross-examination. I'm sure she will later. But I have a busy day ahead of me now. All I have to do is convince Charlotte that this is part of our pact. Chapter 4. Standing on the street outside the restaurant, Dad runs his hand through his hair. His brow is furrowed. His expression is flummoxed. He just sent Mr. Offerman off to the Fifth Avenue store in a town car, letting him know he'd join him there soon. But first he must grill me, understandably. When were you going to tell me? Here's the thing. I can't tell him I'm faking it for Mr. Offerman. If my dad knows that I just pulled that engagement out of my ass for the sake of his business deal, he'll think he has no choice but to apologize to Mr. Offerman. He'll walk up to him, fix on his Honest Abe look, and say he's sorry, but his son was just joking. That's the kind of man he is, and the kind of business he runs. And if he has to go back to his hand-picked buyer, tail between his legs, and confess that his party boy son put his foot in his mouth, that'll screw up his big sale in a heartbeat. Nope. Can't let that happen. I won't put my dad in the position of being in on this fake engagement. But the fact is, he needs me to be engaged. I saw the look in Mr. Offerman's eyes when I dropped the E-word. As single Spencer, man about town, I'm the wild card in this deal that's not quite sealed. With a ring on Charlotte's finger, I become the golden child. So I do something I don't want to do, but I have to do it. Pad the lie. Make it airtight. It just happened last night when I asked her. I didn't even know you were dating, he adds. A woman in a tight pink skirt and black heels walks in our direction. She shoots me a flirty look, and I'm about to smile back when I realize I need to cut myself off. Ouch. I've just handcuffed my favorite appendage for the next few weeks. But that's okay. I can do this. I can pretend to be engaged. I can put my dick on ice, so to speak. I wanted to tell you right away, and well, right away was this morning. How long have you been together? Keep it simple, keep it short. It all happened so quickly, Pops, I say, adopting a look of wonderment and hopefully puppy love for my bride-to-be. We've always gotten along so well, as you know, and been great friends. I think it was one of those things where the one for you is just right under your nose, but we didn't realize it for the longest time. Then one night a few weeks ago, we admitted that we had feelings for each other and, bam, the rest is history. Wow. Did that sound believable or what? I can so do this. Dad holds up a hand. Not so fast. What does that mean, the rest is history? How did you propose? And for Christ's sake, where did you get the ring from? If you say Shane Company, I will disown you, he says in mock seriousness. I need a ring, stat. A big-ass ring. The son of a jewelry magnate would get nothing less for his lady. We fell in love fast, Dad. We dated for a few weeks. That sounds plausible enough, but it would sound a little better like this. That was all we needed, because it was built on the foundation of years of friendship. You know what they say. Marry your best friend, I say, though I have no clue if anyone really says that. But even so, I might as well be slamming the basketball into the net with that one, because it sounds fucking awesome. My dad nods in understanding as I finish my ode to my fictional love affair. When you realize you can't go a day without the woman you adore by your side, you need to make her yours, whether you've been dating a few weeks or been in love with her for years. So I proposed last night. Couldn't wait any longer. When you just know something is right, you go for it, don't you think? He sighs in delight as a cab swoops along the road. I couldn't have said it better myself. He should hire me to write his ads. That was money. But no, I don't have a ring, I say, then I wink. Would you happen to know somewhere that I could get one right away? He strokes his chin, pretending to be deep in thought. Ah, I just might know the place. He laughs at his own cleverness and clasps my arm. Come by at 2, and Nina will hook you up with a beautiful stone and setting. You can't be engaged without a ring from Catherine's. Truer words? My phone buzzes in my pocket. Charlotte's ringtone, the Darth Vader entrance march. She picked it herself as a joke. Charlotte, I say to my dad as I gesture to the phone. Maybe change that now that she's going to be your wife, my dad suggests. Then he points at me, a smile on his face. Hey, that was my first official piece of advice to you as a soon-to-be married man. A momentary spate of nerves lodges in my chest. What if Charlotte won't go along with the plan? What if she laughs at me, as she fucking should, and tells me this is the craziest idea in the world, and no way is she going to do it? I tell myself not to panic prematurely. This is what friends do for each other. They pretend they're going to marry you when you need them to, right? The ringtone sounds again. Vader is marching closer. You should answer it now. Women like that, my dad says. Hey, that's my second great piece of advice. I steel myself, slide my thumb across the screen, and go into character. Good morning to my beautiful bride-to-be, I say in a smooth, romantic voice. She cracks up. Why are we playing so early? Don't tell me you started hitting the sauce on a Friday morning. Are you drunk off your ass already, Spence? I'm just drunk on you. Where are you right now? Just talked with one of our suppliers. Got us an even better deal, thank you very much. Nachos are on you next time. But why are you acting like a lovesick weirdo? Well, sweetheart, I say, meeting eyes with my dad, who gives me a thumbs up as I lay it on thick for his benefit. I'll come see you shortly, and you can tell me all about it in person. Okay, she says slowly. But the deal is good, so I don't have to give you the play-by-play in person, or even on the phone. I need to go jump in the shower anyway. And no, don't say it. I'm not literally going to jump in the shower. I laugh. Of course. I'll be there in 20 minutes. I can't wait to see you, too. I almost say Pookie before I end the call, but then I'd have to relinquish my balls to the guys' committee. I like my balls. I'm rather attached to them. I end the call before she can protest, and then give my dad a knowing look. The woman needs me. My dad waggles his eyebrows. You must heed the call. He rubs his hands together. This is the best news ever. I couldn't be happier. I've always liked Charlotte. And I couldn't feel any guiltier. I rarely lied to my dad as a kid. I'm pretty sure I've never done it as an adult. The morsels of guilt zipping around inside are new to me, and they're kind of crummy. But it'll be worth it. The deal memo's done. The contract will be inked in a matter of days. This little lie will help the transition go smoothly. He grabs me in a big embrace. Call your mother later. She'll want to hear it all from you. I'll give her all the mushy details, I say, wincing inside as I prep to lie to Mom as well. I catch a cab to Charlotte's. Along the way, I text Nick to cancel. Family stuff this weekend. Gotta bail tomorrow. We'll celebrate another time. It'll take him hours to reply. Nick is the rare breed of modern man, sometimes spotted in the wild without a screen in his face. He's a pen and paper kind of guy, due in no small part to him being a world-class cartoonist. As the yellow car zips along Lexington Avenue, I look up, bang her, the hot bartender, then fire off a quick text. Sorry, babe. Something came up, and I need to see the fam. Another time. Her reply arrives 30 seconds later. You have an open invitation with me. Those are two of my favorite words. Open invitation. But she's not the one I'm thinking of when I arrive in Murray Hill. It's the woman behind a massive bouquet of balloons. Chapter 5. Easily, there are 36 of those suckers, all the size of Martian heads, in every shade of pastel known to HGTV. A centerpiece balloon rises in the middle, higher and prouder than the rest. That one is the lone bright shade, It's blood red, and I think it's supposed to be shaped like a heart, but it looks like a big butt to me. I hand the cabbie a 20, telling him to keep the change and shut the door behind me as he screeches off in search of the next fare. I can't even see her face, or her chest, or her waist. The top half of her is entirely obscured by balloons, but I'd recognize those legs anywhere. Charlotte ran track in high school and has strong, toned legs with muscular calves that look like sin come to life when she wears high heels. Come to think of it, they're fuck hot right now in white socks and sneakers. She must have been out for her morning run earlier today. Peering down the street at her, I watch the scene unfold as I eat up the sidewalk with long strides. She tries to hand the bouquet to a mother pushing a stroller. The mom gives her a shake of the head and a sneer. As I cut the distance to 10 feet, she offers the balloons to a girl who looks to be about 10. "No way!" the girl shouts and runs the other direction. From behind the balloons, Charlotte heaves a frustrated sigh. "Let me guess," I say as I reach her. "You've either ditched the lucky spot to attempt a new career as a balloon peddler, or Bradley Dipstick has struck again." "Third time this week. He can't seem to understand the meaning of the words, we are never getting back together." She yanks the balloons away from her face, but they bat her hair. She tries again to slam them away, but static cling is working against her. The pastel fuckers are relentless, and a slight breeze keeps jamming them closer to Charlotte's hair. "These are the world's most obnoxious balloons, and I swear the other residents are whispering about his plan to get me back, since they all know about what he did in the first place." "He just sent them, I take it?" "Yes," she says through gritted teeth as she clutches the bouquet. "About 2 minutes after I called you, I was heading out to get a quick coffee, and the doorman rang to tell me they had these balloons for me, but they were too big to fit in the elevator, so could I please come take them? Even if I wanted to keep them, I wouldn't be able to get them to my apartment." "And you're trying to give them away?" I ask as I extend a hand, gesturing for her to give them to me. "I thought perhaps a child might enjoy them more than an adult woman. Shockingly, I've outgrown my balloon fetish." A bus groans to a stop outside her building, and a plume of exhaust sends a balloon straight for Charlotte's face. "Oomph," she utters, as a vile, cotton candy pink balloon attacks her. I grab the tangled mess of string and jerk it away from her, then hold them high above my head. "We can't just let them fly away into the sky? Float over Manhattan in shades of garish Easter egg?" She shakes her head. "No. Balloons eventually lose their helium and then they float down. They get stuck on trees or fall to the ground and animals eat them and get sick, and that is not okay." Charlotte is a softie. She loves animals. "Gotcha," I say with a nod. "Just so I'm clear, are you okay witnessing the massacre of 36 obnoxious balloons right about now?" She nods resolutely. "It might scar me a little bit, but I'm confident I can get through it." "Cover your ears," I say, then grab my keys with my free hand and proceed to stab each balloon with a loud pop, including the ass-shaped one, until I'm holding a limp bouquet of broken rubber. Sort of like Bradley. Here's everything you need to know about how Bradley earned his stripes as a total asshole. He and Charlotte met 2 years ago, since they both lived in the same building. They started dating, hitting it off, and going strong for a while. They talked about moving in together. They decided to buy a bigger place on the 10th floor and get engaged. Everything was going swimmingly until the day they were all set to sign the papers on the 2-bedroom, and Bradley headed down early to, get this, check out the pipes. Yeah, that was his real excuse. When Charlotte arrived, pen in hand, Bradley was banging the realtor against the kitchen counter. "I never did care for those steel counters," Charlotte had said, and I'd been so proud of her for coming up with that zinger in the heat of the moment. Of course, in reality, she'd been devastated. She'd loved the guy. She'd cried on my shoulder as she told me the story, zinger and all. That had been 10 months ago, and when Bradley finally ditched the realtor, he embarked on a campaign to win Charlotte back. With gifts. Abhorrent gifts. I stuffed the flaccid balloons into the garbage can on the corner. The animals are safe now from his reign of terror. Thank you, she says with relief, as she grabs a tie from her wrist and yanks her hair off her face into a quick ponytail. That was like a pastel explosion of pathetic. Once you killed them, they were pretty droopy, too. Like Bradley? I ask, with an arch of the eyebrow. Her lips quirk into a tiny grin. She's trying not to laugh. She covers her mouth. Charlotte has never been one to kiss and tell. She never shared details of their sex life. Not that I wanted to know any, but she was a vault. So the fact that she's holding up a thumb and forefinger and mouthing a little bit is a huge deal for her. For me, too, it turns out. I'm a guy, and therefore I'm in competition with all men, all the time, so I can't help but feel a surge of triumph. That is so not an issue for me whatsoever. Let's get you that coffee, and I'll tell you why I was acting like a lovesick weirdo. Chapter 6. As she pours sugar into her cup, her eyes widen. As she adds a drop of half and half, they turn into saucers. And as she brings the coffee to her lips, her eyeballs practically pop out of her head. When I mention the dinner tomorrow, she nearly spits out the hot beverage. Then she clutches her belly, clasps her hand on her mouth, and shudders with laughter. How do you get yourself into these situations? I like to think it's my wit and charm, but in this case, it might have been my big mouth, I say, with a what-can-you-do shrug. Thing is, there's only one answer to that question. I have to show up with a fiancé, which means she has to say yes, so I turn serious. Will you do it? Will you pretend to be engaged to me for a week? The laughter doesn't stop. That's your brilliant idea? That's your best solution to the foot-in-the-mouth problem? Yes, I say, nodding, staying firm to the plan. It's a great idea. Oh, Spencer, that's fantastic. Really, truly, one of your best ideas ever. She leans against the creamer counter at this hip little coffee shop near her place. And by best idea, I mean worst. Why? Tell me, why is it such a bad idea? She takes a deliberate pause, then holds one finger in the air for emphasis and speaks. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you want this fake engagement to work, right? You want to pull it off? Yes, obviously. She stabs her finger against her sternum. And so your bright idea is to ask me? Who else would I ask? She rolls her eyes. You're aware that I'm pretty much the worst liar in the universe? I wouldn't call you the worst. She stares at me like I'm crazy. I think I might be. Do I need to remind you of the time in junior year when you and your friends pranked my dorm? If memory serves, I not only witnessed your prank thanks to skipping out of the notebook screening early, but my roomies got the truth about who done it in about 5 seconds. You couldn't have caved that quickly, I insist, taking a drink of my coffee as I flash back to college. One of my buddies had been dating one of Charlotte's friends. The girlfriend had hung his TV remote from a fourth-story window since she thought he watched too much TV, and to get even, he enlisted a bunch of us in a little furniture switcheroo. Trouble was, Charlotte caught us in the act, so I swore her to secrecy, promising we'd return everything after midnight. Oh, I did. I absolutely did. It wasn't hard to get the truth out of me, she says adamantly, looking me straight in the eyes. All they had to do was ask who relocated all the common room furniture to the laundry room, then tickle it out of me. If I could have made it through that movie, I never would have walked in on the prank. I still blame Nicholas Sparks for my failure to protect your trick. I promise you won't be forced to sit through a Nicholas Sparks film under this fake engagement scenario. And I swear, there won't be any tickle torture confessions. Look, I just think this is not only ridiculous, but also highly likely to blow up in your face. She softens her tone. I care about you, Spencer. I know you want to make this pretend engagement work for your dad's sake, but of all the women you know in New York, why on earth would you pick me? Even an escort agency would be smarter. Those women know how to be believable fiancé types. I scoff at the idea and then clasp my hand on her shoulder, squeezing her, like a coach trying to persuade a free agent to join his team. I need to convince her she can do this, because she can. She knows me better than anyone. Plus, I can't just call up an escort agency and order up a fiancé for a week. Hello, can I have the full girlfriend experience with a side of fries to go, please? One, I don't know any escort agencies. Two, the buck stops at Charlotte. I offered her up this morning as my bride. It's Charlotte or nothing. It won't even take up that much time. It'll just be a few events to go to together. Picking out a ring today, then this dinner thing tomorrow. You can do this. It's you and me, babe, I say, and she furrows her brow at the last word. Is that what you call me as your fiancé? Babe? Or is it sweetheart? Or something else? Snookums? Honey bear? Sweet cheeks? Snuffleupagus? I assure you, it's not Snuffleupagus. I kind of like Snuffleupagus, she says, and now she's just trying to pull my leg. Or maybe avoid giving me an answer. I guess it's babe then, I say, staying the course, as she drinks some of her coffee. I don't know why I called you that, except for the obvious. You're a babe. She smiles again and says in the softest voice, thank you. So are you. See? Charlotte and I can both appreciate each other's appearance. That's one of the great hallmarks of our friendship. I can acknowledge she is a babe, and she can do the same with me, and we're still all good. That's why she has to be my pretend fiancé. I gesture from her to me, confidence coursing through me. Maybe it's a false bravado, maybe it's real, but it's all I've got, and I need her. The clock's ticking on the 2 p.m. opening curtain at Catherine's. My point is this. We've done this. It's our game, I say, like I'm convincing her to join the crew I'm assembling for a Vegas casino heist. We know the drill. I play fake fiancé with you all the time, and you with me. She worries away at the corner of her lip. It's kind of ridiculously cute. Like, if she were really my fiancé, I'd probably think that was adorable, and I would lean in for a quick peck. That's for 3 minutes, at the most, at a bar, she points out. That's just a quick wham-bam thank you ma'am kind of thing to save each other from unwanted advances. For this, I'd have to keep it up for a week, you're saying? Under scrutiny? Of the press, your parents, your dad's buyer, and everyone else? I just think you're asking for trouble. Yes, but who knows me better than you? You're the only person who could possibly pull this off, I say. And as a new rush of customers streams into the tiny coffee shop, we head out, making our way back toward her building, coffee cups in hand as we walk. I want to help you. You know I do. I just think everyone will know we're not really engaged, and then that's not helpful to you at all. Undeterred, I press on. Then let's have a debrief, especially since I'm supposed to buy you a ring at 2 p.m. Her eyes go wide, and I keep reassuring her. Let's go over every single thing we need to know. Like what toothpaste I use and whether you hog the sheets? I don't hog the sheets, I say, as we sidestep a husband and wife, each wearing babies and Bjorns, and arguing about where to brunch. And I use Minty Fresh Crest, the teeth-whitening kind, she says. But let's be honest, that's not what anyone is going to ask. Also, have you thought about how you're going to survive a week or more without your favorite pastime? She says, as an evil glint lights up her brown eyes. I can handle being celibate. She nods. Sure. Keep telling that to yourself. She stops and points at me. But I'm serious. If I do this, you better not mess around with anyone else after hours. Hope bounces wildly in my chest. Does that mean you're saying yes? She shakes her head. Not yet. I'm just pointing out another potential roadblock for you. It's going to be a long 7 days for you, she says, elbowing me in the ribs. Besides, how are you going to manage the fact that you were basically publicly dating a few weeks ago? What are you going to tell your dad and his buyer about that? Or how about the woman you saw in Miami a month ago at the restaurant opening? I wave a hand, like the escape artist I am. leave it to the master. If anything comes up about that celebrity trainer, I'll just deny it. No one believes the gossip rags anyway. And the Miami thing was just a friendly posed photo. Besides, I already devised a perfect story of how we fell in love. I told my dad it happened quickly, in just a few weeks, in fact, and that I proposed to you last night because I realized after all these years that I'd been in love with you the whole time.
The whole time? She asks, lifting an eyebrow.
I shrug playfully. The whole damn time. I've been head over heels. It finally dawned on me what I was feeling, and I got down on one knee to make you mine. She doesn't say anything at first, just parts her lips, and I stare at them for longer than usual. They are really pretty lips. I mean, from an empirical point of view. As her fake fiancé, it's good for me to be knowledgeable about all her features, including her lips. Assuming she says yes. She has to say yes.
That's actually a sweet story, she says, her voice completely sincere, as we stand on the corner of her block, holding each other's gaze. A true friends-to-lovers romance?
Yes, I say quickly, breaking the eye contact because it's a bit too much for me to handle right now. I have no clue why it feels weird, whether it's the words or the way she looks at me. Or really, why I feel weird at all. We keep walking, and she takes a hearty gulp of her coffee. She straightens her spine and draws in a breath, and I cross my fingers that she's about to agree.
I want to help you, but,
she says, her voice trailing off. My chest craters, like worse than those deflated balloons. I am out of air. I'm going to have to tell my dad the engagement ended before it even started, hang my head, cry in my soup, and claim Charlotte dumped me and broke my heart.
Crap, she mutters. Incoming douche.
It's the total asshole himself. Bradley, Bender over the counter, Buckingham walks toward us. He hates me. Not that I give a shit, but he detests me because I had the audacity to advise Charlotte against buying an apartment with him. It didn't make financial sense to go in together in this building when other residences in the hood were increasing in value faster. He's about 6 feet, which makes him 2 inches shorter than me. He has blondish red hair, broad shoulders, and the cheesy grin of a vacuum cleaner salesman. He works in PR. He's senior VP of communications for a huge pharmaceutical company that's always under fire. King of spin, ace of liars, captain of scum. Charlotte, he calls out, waving to her. Did you get the balloons? He pulls up next to us, barely making eye contact with me. They didn't fit in the elevator, but it really doesn't matter. You need to stop sending me gifts. It's over with us. In fact, she says, and reaches out to grab my free hand, threading her fingers through mine and surprising the fuck out of me, since she's not a hand holder. I'm engaged to Spencer now. Whoa. That surprise over her holding my hand, it's nothing compared to the surprise from what comes next. She thrusts her coffee cup at Bradley, and in the blink of an eye she wraps her hands around my neck and presses her lips to mine. Chapter 7. Charlotte is kissing me, on the streets of New York. Her lips are on mine. She tastes fantastic. Like cream and sugar and coffee and sweetness. Like all the good things in the world. Like I'd imagined she'd taste. Not that I've been thinking about kissing my best friend. But look, you can't help where your mind wanders sometimes as a guy. Any man who is friends with a woman has taken the old imagination out for a stroll to Kissing Avenue, then Lover's Lane, then Fucking Street. Which is exactly what I'm going to be visiting in ye old brain if she keeps brushing those lips softly against mine in this fluttery, lingering kind of kiss. Because it is getting harder to think about anything other than turning up the volume on this lip lock. A lot harder. She lets out the tiniest little noise. Like a sigh, or a gasp, or an almost but not quite moan. And if she does that again, I will be pushing her against the slate-gray brick wall of her building, caging her in, sliding my hands along her sides, and turning this into a full-body kiss. because she is too fucking sexy for her own good. For my good. She lets go of my lips. My hard-on doesn't get the message to chill out. It's still pointing in her direction, wanting more. I cycle to my certified best buzzkill, picturing sweaty basketball players, and it goes down as Charlotte flashes a devilishly satisfied grin at Bradley. While Charlotte was busy devouring me on Lexington Avenue, Bradley's jaw had become dislodged from his face and fell to the ground. Excellent. We got engaged last night, and I couldn't be happier, she says, snuggling up next to me and snaking an arm around my waist. He tries to speak, but fish air bubbles come out instead. Oh, this is priceless. I stare down at my shoes. I'm not smirking right now. I swear, I haven't got a big-ass grin on my face. I'm just the innocent bystander who got lip-smacked by the goddess. And like I said, it would be awesome if you could stop assaulting me with balloons and teddy bears and chocolate-covered cherries.